This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, we've kind of seen this before. We saw the Cleveland Cavaliers a couple of years ago down 3-1, rally and take home the NBA championship. And Golden State's task starting tonight is to do exactly the same thing. As an organization, they've done it before. They did it to Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City in the 2016 Western Conference Finals. But they're going up against a Toronto team that is ready for anything that they're going to get thrown at, and that includes Kevin Durant. Toronto has been excellent in what Nick Nurse has done in this series in defensive adjustments and his ability to substitute at the right time and manage his players. It's been a really pleasant surprise to see this Raptors team play this well. I always thought Toronto would give Golden State a little bit of a fight, but I did not think we would be sitting here in Game 5 with the Raptors having an opportunity to wrap this series up as quickly as they are. It has been a testament to everything that Toronto has done to get into this position. The gambles that they've taken have all worked out, and it has been awesome to see, especially from a guy like Masai Ujiri, who made all of these changes at great risk to his own reputation and job status in Toronto. Dwayne Casey out, Nick Nurse is in, trading DeMar DeRozan, getting Kawhi Leonard, getting Danny Green in the deal as well. But those kind of deals have now paid off. They are one win away of winning their NBA's first franchise in Canada win an NBA championship. And their first, obviously, as an organization. And Golden State right now needs to get a reset button. They have now got to win the next three out of the four games in order to capture this championship back. And it starts tonight in Toronto with Game 5. Then go home and win Game 6. And then go home and go back over to Toronto and win Game 7. They need to win three games straight to win this championship. And right now, they haven't been able to do anything. They've gotten big nights from Steph Curry that have resulted in losses. They've gotten Klay Thompson and Kevon Looney back that resulted in a loss. Durant becomes the question mark. If he comes back and somewhat effective, then Golden State can begin chipping away at this 3-1 deficit to get back into this series. Get it to Oakland and win Game 6, and then anything can happen. But in order to do that, you got to win tonight. They got to win tonight.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
You know, I got to admit, I'm looking forward to this NBA offseason. I can't wait to see how this all shakes out. I mean, it's Durant, it's Kawhi, it's Kyrie. I mean, it's all figuring out what LeBron wants to do with the Lakers.
I think it's going to be bigger than the finals.
Right, the Anthony Davis situation, right? Do the Pelicans pull a trade? Who steps up to offer? You know, do the Knicks trade, like, do they have to trade their second pick? I mean, the third pick, whatever they got?
Third pick
to New Orleans for Anthony Davis. I mean, it's all sorts of cool things that are coming this offseason. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
Do the Pelicans trade number one overall?
Yeah.
Pick, which we are assuming will be Zion?
Yep.
I mean, I know that seems far-fetched, but I mean, anything goes nowadays.
What's up with the Lakers, right? I mentioned with LeBron, but what's going on with that? What about the Clippers? What do the Clippers put together? I mean, there's so many cool things that are going on this offseason.
Lakers need to go front office.
Oh, I know. Right now, especially. Gosh. So I'm really looking
just
forward to
it. LeBron.
But again, you just point to the two guys in these finals that are making all the stories. I mean, look, Kevin Durant has been a part of this finals without playing one second because of not being able to play.
He's been a main person. We talked more about Durant than we have about Curry.
I know. It's always been about Durant. Durant's not playing. What does this mean? What does that mean? What is Toronto going to do?
SI just put out an article like, you know, this whole Durant thing could have been avoided had the Warriors done this.
Yeah, right.
That's just the narrative out of Warriors.
Yep.
It isn't anybody else what they're doing on the court, you know, except for game two. And leading into the series without Durant, we're very high on the Warriors. Like, this is the Warriors of old. This is the fun Warriors. This is what we like.
Oh, we were all high on them. I loved them. Loved them, right? I mean, there's no idea that game five in this series would be Toronto's coronation.
Yeah. And is Kawhi Leonard that good of a player that he can shut down an entire team? I know he's not doing it by himself, but, I mean, are we ready to anoint him as, you know, a cement top two, top three player right now?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the funny thing about it is on Friday night, he had that interview with Doris Burke in which he was just, I mean, unemotional. I mean, he was just...
robotic.
Robotic. Just,
well, we made
I don't
fun
play
the...
for fans. I don't play for records. I play to win.
Yeah, last week we're making fun of him because he's not even giving his teammates fist bumps.
Yeah, no.
You know,
he's not doing anything.
Then that video comes out of like Boardman... You know, board man get ball, board man get paid.
Yeah, yeah. There was another video somebody put out on Twitter, which I thought was fascinating. It was after game four, and the Raptors are walking to the locker room, and they tweet, not a smile.
Right.
No one was smiling. They're all like, no, we're not. We're getting this done, and we're not doing anything until we get it done.
God, what if he lifts the trophy and then just goes off?
I know, right?
I've been holding this in for so long, I'm going to let everybody know what I'm thinking.
I was like, you know what? You're going to send me to Toronto? Fine. I'll win a title, but that's all they're getting. Here. I got you what you really loved. Here. Bye.
You didn't love me.
Yeah. You loved what I could bring you. Here. That's it. Oh, yeah.
Just wanted me for my talents.
Seriously, though, I think if they win the championship, he's done there. Like, why? Like, wrap it up. I did what I was told. Right? I came here. I won a title. Now I get to go do my thing. Goodbye.
God, that would be the strangest move ever.
I know. It really would.
Because, I know we talked about this last week. I don't remember a time ever when somebody just came in, won a title, and took off.
It reminds me of those movies where somebody's doing something really good, but they want to leave, right? And they want to leave, and they go, are you still thinking about going back to the big city? And they're like, oh, yeah, first chance I can get. Yeah, absolutely. But then just as they're packing, they realize how good they had it where they were, and then they stay, right. And that's how the movie changes. Like, that's with Kawhi. He was probably like, you still thinking about going to L.A.? Yeah, first chance I can.
It's a John Hughes film.
Yeah, John Hughes film, right? But then at the last minute, they play some sappy melody, and he changes his mind, and he runs back to his friends or girlfriend or group, small town, wherever it is.
Runs to Lowry. Yeah. I can't quit you. Yeah.
I can't quit you. What happened to the big city? It's big city right here in your heart. Changes the whole thing. Right? I mean, just that's the way those were written. That's the way I'm thinking Kawhi Leonard in the end goes, yeah, no, I can't leave. Jurassic Park is too big. It's big enough for all of us. We'll all enjoy our time here. But in all seriousness, think about this offseason, how great it's going to be. I mean, oh my God. Durant, Kawhi, Kyrie's crying about something, whatever he's doing. Pelicans, Knicks, Lakers, Clippers, right? Do the Nuggets do anything? Or are the Nuggets just happy being a bunch of people nobody knows? I'm telling you, one day that we're going to win and no one's going to recognize our guys on the streets. That's our goal. We'll make sure we win a title where we're just the most unrecognizable NBA names you know in this league. I mean, it's going to be a great offseason. July 1st. I can't wait.
Yeah, but don't forget, the greatest thing in NBA history is that moratorium. Period.
Oh, right. That's part where we're not doing anything.
Where everybody can talk.
Right.
And nothing's done.
Nothing gets done. Right.
Who was it? Why am I forgetting his name? DeAndre. Isn't that where he went? He was like signed with the Mavericks and then.
Oh, God.
But you know, it was like the Clippers. Yes, but now he's with the Mavericks.
Right. Mark Cuban was rumored to be going to his house and got lost in Houston. That's right.
But got bad directions.
Oh, my God. God, that's hilarious.
Because Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and Doc Rivers were all camped out in his house. And they don't answer the door.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Can we do that in all sports? Can we throw a moratorium period in all sports?
I mean,
just to have, so we can have the craziness.
Hysterical.
But I don't know if it would it work in other sports. It works in basketball because, you know, there's more divas in basketball than there is in football or baseball.
I think it works in basketball because it, like, one guy can change your franchise. Everybody goes,
maybe that's it. Yeah.
Like, one guy can really make a huge difference. And I think that's when everybody starts going a little crazy. A little. That is so funny. That is so funny. It's so nuts. It's that crazy time. But think about there's two guys in these finals. Again, just go back to our point. There are two guys in this NBA finals that we've been talking about more than any other player. Maybe Curry is like a really, really close third, but that's about it. And it's Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant, and both of them are unlikely to be with the current teams they're on in a next couple of weeks, right? In about a month. They're both unlikely to be on the teams that they're currently on. And we've been talking about them more than any two players in the NBA Finals, and one doesn't play. And one doesn't play. And that's how fun it's going to be in July when we hear all the rumors and all the shakeups and all of this other stuff. I mean, you couldn't write a more comical situation for the league than what happened with the Anthony Davis trade deadline thing.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was so funny to watch these teams puke all over themselves like, oops, we release that? I'm sorry. Wow.
Not only that, but even the final 2 months of the season with Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Culminating with this T-shirt at the final game. That's all, folks.
Right. He wears a That's All Folks T-shirt on the last home game and then says, oh, I didn't pick this out.
Somebody dressed me.
Yeah. Wow. This is great. It's like there is a script writer in the NBA office in New York telling guys what to do. Like, here's what we're going to do. You guys are going to leak. Lakers, Pelicans, you're going to leak everything the Lakers offered you, and we're going to create drama with LeBron. And then Anthony Davis, you pout for the rest of the way, and then wear this T-shirt on the final home game. And Kyrie, you complain about everything you possibly can en route to the end of the season. Kawhi, you don't say anything the entire way, whether you love it, hate it, or want to leave or stay. Durant, you mope too. You do your thing. All of you stick to the script. We're going to have a great fun offseason.
Pelicans, to make up for your sacrifice of leaking all the information, we'll give you the number one pick.
Yeah, and the Pelicans get the number one pick, thus creating the drama about a Zion-Anthony Davis possible combination.
Or trade.
Man, you can't write this. Next thing you know, we're going to have an exploding limousine, and then this guy's going to do this, and this guy's going to return from missing in action, and it's going to be the best. It's going to be the best.
Then we'll just have Tom Cruise fight Justin Bieber on a halftime show.
Yep, exactly. And in the middle of this all, Bieber and Cruise will be fighting in the octagon, and that's how we're rolling with NBA free agency. In all seriousness.
End scene.
Yeah, exactly. In all seriousness, this is a blast. This is a blast. Are you kidding me?
Well, that's why the NBA has become what it is. That's why they're rising fast as being the number one watched sport. It's not for what happens on the court. It's what happens off the court.
I mean, think about Kawhi Leonard, for example. He has got a great general manager, a great coach, a great fan base. He has got great players around him, and they could probably add maybe one or two other missing pieces additional pieces to kind of help them sustain what they're doing here. The Eastern Conference, yes, Giannis and the Philadelphia 76ers, but they're as good as anybody else. He still may want to leave. And Durant's on a team that all they do is win the West and win championships, and he wants to leave. It's awesome. Are you kidding me? It's awesome. You can't get enough. It's that good. All right, 800-777-2907. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. Ron with two N's. That's how you spell it. So we want to make sure it gets to us so it doesn't get to somebody else. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM. on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Ron, I had to bring this to your attention on a tweet that I saw. Before that, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. I just saw this tweet from 80s Sports and Stuff that has a picture of Dan Fouts. And Dan Fouts is wearing the gold pants with the lightning bolt down the sides, the blue jersey with the gold numerals and the lightning bolt on the shoulders, the dark blue helmet with the lightning bolt, and the caption says, Dan Fouts celebrates a birthday today, shown here pondering if there's humanly possible to create a finer NFL uniform than the one he's wearing right now. And I agree. I think that old Charger blue uniforms, not the powder blue, but the ones that I grew up with in the 80s, were fantastic. They were really sharp looking. And so I wanted to bring that to your attention because I know you're a Chargers fan.
Oh, hold on. I gotta see what uniform you're looking at.
I just sent it out I just retweeted it. So it's great. Just that darker blue, the one from the, you know, when you saw them play the Dolphins and, okay. Well, that wasn't, they actually wore the white in that game, but that darker blue, that's a great look. That was a great look. It kind of made me like the Chargers when I was a kid. It was kind of like my second team, just because I liked Fouts and Air Coryell and whatnot back in the day.
How could you not like them?
How could you not like them? They were great. They went to the playoffs. I like the old Chargers. I like the 82 Chargers because the 82 Chargers, people forget this, they played it's not the 82 Chargers. It was the 81 Chargers and the 82 playoffs, the January of 82 playoffs. They played back-to-back football games in two polarizing weather conditions that I don't think anybody has ever really, you'd have to really look through the references of the pro football playoffs to find a span of 7 days in which the Chargers went from a literal humid monsoon in Miami where they were dehydrating on the field to frigid temperatures in Cincinnati where I think two drunk people died because they took off their shirts. It was amazing. They went from the AFC divisional round against the Dolphins in which they were carrying Kellen Winslow off the field in the double overtime game, and then they went to Cincinnati and they played in frigid temperatures, so much so Dan Fouts did not wear a glove and says to this day his fingers hurt in the cold from a game 37 years ago. That's amazing. Plus that 1981 Chargers team had a kicker named Rolf Benerschke who became the host of Wheel of Fortune when Pat Sajak left for a bit. But you didn't know that, Mr. Charger. So that was one of my favorite early 80s football teams.
I would have known that if you had put the letters, give me a chance to guess some letters.
Yeah.
Would you have given me R-S-T-L-N-E?
Yeah, probably would have. Yes, exactly. Spin the wheel for cash and prizes. Remember when Wheel of Fortune, and this is old school, so I know a lot of you are young, and so I'm dating myself a little bit. But there was a time on Wheel of Fortune where you won money, and then you bought stuff.
You shopped.
You went shopping.
Yep.
And so right after you would solve the puzzle, let's say you say Gettysburg Address, and they'd go, yay. And then Pat Sajak would come and you'd go, all right, $3,650. Let's go shopping. And then they always took the Dalmatian and sometimes a hot tub and some painting or picture or whatever it was, or
scooter,
yeah, whatever. And they would go shopping. And then afterwards they'd say you want it on a cag. You want a cash or gift certificate? And they would take gift certificate. The cash meant you carried it over in the game. And if you got bankrupt, you lost that too. But nevertheless, that's how they used to do Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, you know, it'd be great. I wish they could do it just like a week. Go ahead. We're going retro Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, right.
And just for a week. I mean, because even now, like the final round, I mean, first of all, you're already given five letters because those were letters everybody guessed. And even with the letters now, it's just, you know, you find an envelope.
Yeah, and you get an envelope.
Who knows what prize you get. But I would just love for 1 week just go back to how it all started and just have them go shopping. I'd be curious to see what prizes they would be offering.
And remember, the announcer had to go through the whole list of goods.
Because remember, it was themed, too.
Yeah, that's right.
It was like it would be a kitchen, or this is all outdoor. This is stuff you'd find in a garage. I mean, it was always stuff, you know, it was always a, there was a theme to everything that was going on.
Exactly, exactly. And they have they brought Pressure Luck back, and what's the other game show that's coming back on primetime? Am I missing one?
Well, last night I didn't get a chance to watch it because Stanley Cup was, you know, had my attention. But last night I know they aired Celebrity Family Feud, $100,000 Pyramid, and To Tell the Truth.
Oh wow, they're really so, tapping into this game show stuff, aren't
you know,
they?
Go to your DVR on demand, whatever it is that you look for, and those will probably be readily available to watch.
They don't even make up new game shows anymore. Nah, they're just taking old ones and just saying, man, well, this is good.
I mean, there's a game show I get addicted to. It's in the afternoon called Funny You Should Ask. And it reminds
That sounds new.
It reminds me so much of Match Game.
Oh, Match Game was great.
Because basically what it is, you have six comedians, and a lot of the questions are always true or false. So the host will ask the question, the comedian will give a funny response first, and then give the answer that they think, whether it's like true or false or... You know, maybe it's they have to name something. It's always one word answers. And then the contestant agrees or disagrees with them.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's exactly like Match Game, except you have six comedians. And it's really funny.
Oh, see, that's the best. Match Game is still hilarious if you watch the old Match Game.
The old Match Game. The new one, it's like they try too hard.
They try too hard. Back in the day, well, I think the old one, they don't try so hard because they were all kind of inebriated. So yes. I think it was coming out natural, right? They were all a little, we've been here all week.
And it's funny because even though I think there was stronger censorship back then to what you can say or not say versus what, you know, today, obviously we can, you know, there are shows that just openly swear and no issues about it at all.
Yeah, right.
So what made Match Game great is they couldn't swear. They had to throw out all the innuendos.
Oh, exactly. Oh, no doubt.
Which I think made it better. Because then you're like, I know what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all of those questions had sort of a sexual innuendo, but they couldn't come out and say anything, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's just basically how that game was written, and it was brilliantly written that way. The one that when I was younger and I liked Pyramid, but I always felt for the celebrity because that was a pressure job, yeah. Right? When you had to sit in the chair and give clues to some housewife in Des Moines. And you are trying, because if you screw up, they don't win. Like, in order to win Pyramid, you had to get all six of those correct. And if you missed one, that you didn't win Pyramid. And the difference was, it could be from $25,000, $100,000 to like $850.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like you would see these celebrities sit down, stare at the thing, and it would be like things that are red. And they would go, a red car, beep, beep. That's it. You're done. No pyramid. That's it. And it's all the celebrity's fault. So you got to sit there and be really careful. And then,
I seem to remember each square had a, like in the pyramid, each square had a dollar amount though, right?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
$50, $100. I mean, it was nothing. It was peanuts.
Yeah. And Dick Clark would come around and he'd go 50, 100, 150, 250. Yeah, you've won $700. Right. Good luck. And after we pay, after we take it all in California taxes, you got bus fare. Good luck to you. Goodbye. Right. I mean, they were going for $100,000, and Soupy Sales is going to mess that up for you.
I always loved
it. You got to be kidding me.
I always loved it when they didn't get it and Dick Clark would come over and he would start giving clues.
Yeah. And Dick Clark always had the best clue and the celebrity would feel like an idiot.
Oh, right? Man. The answer was, what is white bread? And I should have said Wonder.
Yeah, exactly. And Dick Clark would come in like he'd save the day, but it was a little too late from Janice from Massapequa, who now has to go home with $600 thanks to the brilliant stylings of Richard Klein. God, these game shows. Celebrities to go back to their mansions. Meanwhile, it's like, oh God, how in God's name did I get Charo? She can't even speak English properly. God, she messed up that clue. But they were great. Those 70s celebrities, man, on Match Game,
oh, yeah.
They were the best. I mean, the best. Hilarious, funny. Charles Nelson Reilly, hysterical. Those guys were great. Watching on the old Game Show Network, you'll love it.
is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Again, if you're just waking up, maybe last night you heard the news about David Ortiz being shot in the Dominican Republic at a club. He is, according to his family, doing fine, out of surgery. Video has surfaced of the assailant just walking in, firing at him from the back while he was sitting down. The crowd did get to the assailant. He was in the hospital. They'll question him later. They didn't name him, so they got that. But he basically got off a motorcycle and shot Ortiz in the back. Nobody knows why. Nobody has any speculation as to why. I'm hoping it was – to be honest with you, I kind of hope it's just a – it was a random act of someone crazy looking for some publicity or whatever, and not Ortiz is involved in something serious that we didn't know about. I just hope it's a either misidentification. But Ron, it looks really creepy. The video looks really creepy. It looks like out of a movie.
Really does. I mean, it just I don't know. I'm just shaking my head. I mean, I hope it's, you know, exactly what you said. I hope it's nothing that we're come to find out, like, oh, did you know Ortiz was involved with this and this and this? Because that just, I don't know, that would just ruin a lot of people's opinions of him. I mean, you don't want that. A good guy's a really good guy.
Yep. And it was a weekend full of some good stuff in sports. Rafael Nadal, 12 French Opens. I don't really follow tennis as much as I probably should. I do like the sport and I do watch it. But this is ridiculous how often he wins at on clay at the French Open.
I'll put it to you this way.
12 titles is ridiculous. 12, that is crazy.
12 titles out of 15 appearances.
15 appearances in the finals of the French Open. That's great.
Now he's two behind Federer for, I think, the number of Grand Slams.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Listen, I know it's apples and oranges, I get it, but just to put it in perspective, think about, like, Tiger Woods at Augusta. He's won there 5 times. I mean, it's still...
And that's impressive.
Like, that's crazy impressive. 12 times you are the French Open champion.
Just dominates that course.
But plus, when you think about this, when you think about how young tennis players are, okay, a lot of them win their, you know, winning titles at 18, 19 years old. That means he is beating back not only an older generation when he first emerged, he's beaten his own generation and now likely beating in these tournaments, not necessarily in the finals, but en route, a younger generation that grew up watching him win these things. And that's even impressive. So he's fighting. He fought the older when he was younger. He fought his own people, his own age, I should say, as, you know, the years progress. And then here comes a young group of talent that has risen up, watching him, watching Federer, watching the other guys play, have now risen up, and they're young players, and he's beating them too en route. You know, whether it's an early round or mid round or quarterfinals, he's beating the young talent that's coming up too. That's really impressive. We like dynasties in sports. We take them. We like to bring them down as fast as we bring them up. But this is an incredible feat. I mean, an incredible feat for an athlete.
The other thing to think about is that he is 33. He's ranked number 2 in the world presently. And he's been ranked number 2 in the world since this past November.
God, 33 in tennis. Why don't you break out your walker and get your AARP card? You're going for early bird dinners. What are you kidding me? The TV's too loud and you sleep in a chair. That's how old 33 is in the tennis world. That's awesome. Great job.
He has 18 Grand Slam titles. In singles, he's never won a Grand Slam doubles, but he does have 2 gold medals, 1 a single, 1 doubles as well.
Wow, what year was his first one? Do we know?
His first Grand Slam victory was in 2005, the French
Holy
Open.
Cow. Holy mackerel!
And not only that, he then won the French Open 05, 06, 07, 08, didn't win in 09, then he won again in 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Didn't win in 15 or 16, and now he's on pace again. He's 17, 18, 19.
Does everybody play? Are they all allergic to clay, or is like he's the only one that's like, I have no problems. I can breathe fine.
Yeah, I think the only
thing. And everybody else is like, oh, I can't even see with this stuff.
And the only thing that's kept him out of certain French Opens is because of, he has knee problems. He's developed knee problems over the years.
Yeah.
And so I think there was a couple of French Opens he didn't compete in. I don't know how many times he's ever been bounced out early.
If any of you know this on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, I'm willing to admit my ignorance on this. What makes clay different? Like what's the play on clay? Is that it's not as fast of a game
that I think
like
it's
on
a,
grass
and it's a, but it's a slippery surface.
Right. And it's
because you see them slide all the time.
Right. And he's great at that.
Yeah.
The timing is brilliant. But like they say with the grass at Wimbledon, it's like, I don't know what the back line is, but it's like basically back line to back line. I mean, it's fast. It's fast tennis. It's like hard court, but clay is a little bit more like methodical, like you know, slower game, if you will, I think. But if I've got that wrong, hit me up on Twitter. But I think just my mind is telling me clay is it's a harder substance on you and it's tougher. And I think this makes it more impressive. But you know what? Tennis has been filled with guys who are great at one particular, you know, there've been Wimbledon guys who just love the grass and play there. You know, Pete Sampras was a great Wimbledon champion long time, but man, this is really impressive. 12 times. That's unbelievable. In 15 years, 12 times. That's great. Absolutely great. So that happened over the weekend. You got the Stanley Cup game 6 last night. Boston with 4 goals in the third period. That was quick, too, because it was 1-0 heading into the third. I was thinking, oh, this is going to be good. And then, forget it.
Yeah.
Boston puts a bunch.
It was amazing how quickly they opened that up.
Yeah, really. Exactly. I mean, for 2 periods, nothing. One goal.
It almost felt like once Boston got that second one, which I'd have almost missed because did it happen during intermission? Because it seemed like the puck dropped after intermission. Oh, goal scored. Wait, well, I'm sorry. I went to go get a glass of water at the wrong time.
Yep, exactly right.
But then, I mean, you know, obviously that fifth goal, empty netter.
Yeah.
They're always kind of cheap, but it's so much fun.
Well, they got it to.
It's fun watching guys shoot those, though.
Right. Oh, I know, right?
Just lifting it up over everyone.
So Ryan O'Reilly scored for the Blues, and that was about with like 8-9 minutes left to go in the game. And that made it a 2-goal game. Because it was 3-0 Boston, and then Ryan O'Reilly scored. Now it's a 2-goal game. Now you're thinking, all right, get another goal as quick as you can, and let's make this a 1-goal game where there's some pressure and you're trying to tie it, send it to overtime. But then Boston came right back like 2 minutes later. They came back and scored, and that was it. All of a sudden, you're like, all right, we're going to game 7, which, like I've said today, I don't have a problem with. I like it. Would have been nice to see the cup in St. Louis being skated around in St. Louis with that crowd. But it's going to be now in Boston. And so there you go. So whether they win it or not, now all 3 championships at one point have been in Boston for a period of time. But you know what? Watch this on – when do they got game 7? Is that going to be a Thursday or Wednesday? Tuesday? Let me double check. This is going to be on Wednesday. Wednesday night. So Wednesday night, what I'm going to love the most outside of the cup being paraded around by whoever parades it is how badly Gary Bettman is booed when he steps on the ice to give the team that wins the cup. It's great. They even booed him in Vegas when he came out. Like Vegas was a new team and the people there were like, boo, boo. Being a commissioner is a thankless job. But that comes with the territory. You better get ready for it, because if you ever become one, it's a thankless job. But it's going to come out on Wednesday night. It's one of the great sports trophies of all time. So there you go. So you got that. You had the tennis. Oh, and by the way, the U.S. Open is this week at Pebble Beach. So we got a lot of things going on. And the complaining will start early this week about setup and green speeds. That's what you get. But it'll be the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, one of the most pristine, beautiful golf courses in all the world. That is a great place, Pebble Beach. That 7th hole that's 100 yards long, right on the cliff of the ocean, right by the ocean, they come up on a par 5, and then there's a par 4 that goes in the other way. And in between is a strip of land between those 2 holes. It's about 100 yards long and downhill. And it's in a place where the wind, it can be ferocious. And they got a kit, knock down wedges, or some have taken full swings at full irons to go 100 yards because the wind is vicious. And it's one of the most beautiful par threes you'll ever see at Pebble Beach. It's fantastic. I can't wait. I can't wait to see it this week. So Tiger Woods is going forward, number two of the Grand Slam of the year, and Phil Mickelson looking for his first U.S. Open. You know, Mickelson had a chance to win. There was a, you know, he had the Tiger Slam. Remember, like, where he won three and then he won the Masters the next year? A lot of people forget this. But Phil Mickelson was going for the third leg of the Phil Slam in 2006 because he had won the PGA Championship at Baltusrol at the end of 2005. He won the Masters in 2006. When they got to Wingfoot, he was playing on the final hole. He needed a bogey. He needed a par to win, bogey to tie, and he made double bogey and lost. And how it happened was he was on the tee at 18. Jeff Ogilvie was in the clubhouse. Mickelson didn't realize he needed a par, hit driver on the 18th hole, trying to be aggressive, snapped it to the left. When he got to the ball, he tried to hit out, but he hit a tent, like a hospitality tent, and it went backwards. Then he hit it near the green in the bunker, and then bunkered it back the other way and made double bogey, and afterwards said, "I'm such an idiot." And Jeff Ogilvie, if he knew he had to make a bogey, would have won, at least got him a playoff, he might have played that hole differently. But that Phil being Phil, you got to go aggressive with the driver. But he has not won the career Grand Slam. He's a U.S. Open short. He's won at Pebble Beach a number of times in his career. He was very competitive in 2010 at the U.S. Open, and now we'll see if he can get it at 49 years old later this week. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
Hi, this is Mike Herzing. Let's Talk Wheels with an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. You know, I get calls every week from friends asking for a second opinion on a car repair. Now, if you ever had your car in a shop and it seems like their diagnosis is way off base, well, it might be. Repairing cars is much more complex than the old days, and honest mistakes can be made. But you want to make sure that everybody's on the same page and talking about the same problem. Perhaps you have two problems. If so, you want to make sure that you're talking about the same thing because you can only afford to fix one of them. I wouldn't hesitate to say, hang on a minute, let me check with someone and I'll get back to you. Then call another shop, describe the symptoms, and see if they've heard of that problem before. Not only can this save you money, but it'll also make you feel better about the repair and how much money you're spending. This is Mike Herzing from Let's Talk Wheels, brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. More tips, go to letstalkwheels.com and go to our new podcast, Let's Talk Wheels Podcast. Find it on iTunes, Google Play, and sign up for it.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. So, question tonight, if Durant comes back and the Golden State Warriors win tonight, and he plays better in Game 6 and plays better in Game 7 and they win, will the entire series be Durant's? Just championship will be all Durant.
Of course it will, and he will get the MVP honors.
That's right. If he comes back and he just is spectacular.
Stealing it from Curry once again.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm kind of thinking. That basically he could do that. But listen, if he comes back tonight and plays hard and plays, you know, just plays hard, and they lose, and Toronto is the NBA champs, do people go, well, or do they go, well, he tried?
All right, but will we give him credit for at least, if say he doesn't play, say he practiced and they, you know, coach's decision, didn't play, will we give him credit for at least sitting on the bench cheering his team on?
I hope so. What is he doing in the locker room? Why wouldn't he be on the bench?
I don't know. That's why it's almost like the Warriors want this drama. Like, it's as if they knew they didn't have a chance to win this series at all, and they just want you to focus on something else.
Man, I tell you right now, I can't wait for the tell-all book. Season on the Brink, too. God, they just absolutely, absolutely butchered this thing with Durant, man. They just totally, they didn't make it right for him. They didn't make it right for them. It's been a mess.
Well, and that's why we need the tell-all book. We need to know.
I want
to
know.
Who to blame? Who's the blame for this? Is it Durant or is it the Warriors?
Somebody reach out to Marcus Thompson at The Athletic. He's been covering that team for a long time. He knows what's going on. He could write the tell-all book when it's all said and done, how this all went down. He's saying that there's some rumblings within the locker room. Well, we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. Tonight, if he plays, we might have a series. If he doesn't play, I'm telling you, we're coming back here tomorrow and we're talking about the new NBA champs, the Toronto Raptors.